This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Y's. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby, wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Y's. Movies, Baby!
Ooh, baby, we got a show for you this week.
That's right. We've got an interview, a very, very polarizing topic and a very interesting interview. We've got conversations about ethics, about our show. So much is happening today. Are you ready to talk to a self-proclaimed cum dump meatball?
I am. I'm also goodbye to all of our listeners, I guess. I'll see y'all on the other
what
side.
What is everyone's deal with the stigma?
Everyone
we need to explore
is
the world
stop
of
listening
sex.
To our podcast. I can't wait. Please enjoy this episode. I'll miss you.
Forever Dog.
When first choice is a big old bus,
you turn around and boom, you end up with a sloppy second.
Oh, diva.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow.
Speaking about,
there'll be sun.
Just thinking about.
You know, I used to do that number.
Loads. Sorry, what?
Dressed as Black Annie. Well, guess just Annie now. And I was wearing her outfit and I would tap dance. Because, you know how to tap. Well, I used to know. Well, yeah, you see me tap.
Like that Kimbra song with the guy, somebody I used to know? Used to know.
No.
Where would you do this Annie number?
Did it at Priest. No, I did it at Exposure Drag and I did it at Flaming Saddles.
It's a hard knock
life for us.
Can you imagine if we were like, yeah, we'll be great. We'll do it. It's a duo. We're a stand up duo. And all we did was I fed you songs to finish the lyrics. And that's the
Wait,
whole
give
bit.
Me another one. Give me another one.
Can you feel a
rain on your skin? No one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it in. Speaking of feeding each other things and only letting it in, we have a fun episode today.
What a transition.
Speaking of which, before we get to it.
Well, here's what I wanted to say.
Welcome to Sloppy Seconds with Big Dipper and Meatball. Hi, you sloppy little fucks, you stupid little fucks. Our number is 213-536-9180. Our email is sloppysecondspot@gmail.com. Now on with the show. Hi, you sloppy, stupid little fucks, you nice little fucks. Welcome to Big Dipper and Meatball.
We did it. What I was going to say is, you know, Meatball and I talk a lot of shit on this show. We have a good time. We tell
it's
jokes.
One of my favorite things to do.
Me? Shit talker?
Shit talk?
It says it on my business card. So we talk about a lot of things. And
we get into it.
A while ago, we had a conversation over a few different episodes where Meatball brought up this movie called The Gift. We talked about the idea of bug chasing in relation to HIV. That became a very polarizing topic. We received a bunch of letters, not a bunch, but a handful of letters, a handful of phone calls.
They mailed them right to us.
Yeah. And letters to the P.O. box. And, you know, people, like I was saying, the idea of sex, the idea of HIV, there's a huge stigma around HIV. And one of the biggest... I wouldn't say campaign, but one of the biggest sort of messaging strategies around HIV is reducing the stigma of it and talking about HIV and how it relates to sex and specifically to gay sex. And so that sort of led us down this path where we wanted to explore some things. And all I wanted to say is, we want our show to be able to do this. We want to be able to have conversations and not be afraid to maybe talk about something that's taboo and explore it. One of the criticisms we got was, it's irresponsible to put these things out into the world. But my response to that is, as an inquisitive person, and I think a lot of our listeners are inquisitive as well, I think we want to explore things and we want to explore them with voices that we're familiar with friends. We don't just want to like sort of sit in a dark room and Google things. And we are not a news source and we are also not an encyclopedia. You know what I mean? We are not Google. We are learning about things. We're exploring things. And I don't view that as irresponsible on this platform, because I think anyone who knows, who listens to our show and knows who we are and knows the vibe of our show knows that we are learning and exploring together. You can't turn on this podcast and think, well, this is a fucking MSNBC. Like, that is not us.
Both ears started ringing so loud. Like it was a sign that we shouldn't do this.
But
I think I do agree. And again, we've had this conversation, and I'm just going to reiterate kind of what you
said.
I think that being inquisitive about certain subjects, such as, let's say, if it was bug chasing or something like that, I don't think that it is wrong for me to go to the source of somebody who was into that and talk to them and hear their opinion. Is it the most responsible thing to do to just put it out there for everyone to listen to? I don't think that we're being irresponsible because we're saying like, hey, this is not for us. At least I'm saying this isn't for me, but I can listen to what this person has to say.
Yeah, like, and the world is full of different experiences and perspectives.
It doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with what is being said or done, but I also cannot tell someone else how to live their life.
Right.
I can ask questions.
Yeah.
So
before we play
this
interview,
like I'm being held hostage?
What'd you say?
So does it seem like I'm being held hostage? No,
I'm going to say the shit. But before we get into the interview,
you just hear Tamisha Amon's voice in the background,
deep in the background. You're like, I have never been the Tamisha.
Don't do that.
That was like a French accent, right?
It was French.
Thank you. Very French.
Oui, oui. Bonjour.
Speaking of oui, oui. So before. Before we get into this interview, which at this point you already know what the fuck we're going to be talking about because you read the title of the episode. Before we get into this interview, in order to appease all of you who are feeling critical of us, we wanted to give you this little treat of someone leaving us a voicemail for just to sort of, you know, if you're feeling like you have some shit to say to us, this person is going to say it for us.
Hi, Big Dipper and Meatball. I am very disappointed in you guys. Because I feel like Big Zipper, you're holding poor Meatball hostage to this cum dump thing that you're doing, trying to sneakily get a bug chaser on your podcast. I think it's very irresponsible of you guys. I don't want to tweet at you. I'm just leaving it as a voicemail because I know you might ignore it anyway, or you might listen. But it's really, really sad. That what's the most contradicting thing about it is you guys are vanilla. Just because you fist a little bit or cruise a little bit, Big Dipper, you're still a very vanilla person. You are not a person who is up on your ethical sluttery, your, you know, how to do kink and fetish ethically. You're not involved in that. It's telltale on everything you guys say. You're not the people to talk about this. And poor Meatball is clearly not comfortable talking about it because he's like completely vanilla and monogamous. At least that's the persona that he gives. I just don't understand why you are forcing this on your listening public. And I am a very sexual positive kink, no slut shaming. I just want people to do things with ethics and safety and to understand exactly what they're getting themselves into. Because I said it before, I don't care how many doctors you have, how ignorant you are, I don't care about what you think. In order for you to take multiple loads and not consider the ramifications of co-occurring diseases or having a virus that is that you can't get medicine for because it is resistant, in order for you to be that person, you have to be just some really privileged person who just doesn't care because you already have medical treatment available to you. So I don't understand how you don't understand the privilege of that. And it's irresponsible, and I'm very disappointed. So I know you don't care, but I'd rather say it here than in a tweet.
I like how they pronounce tweet at the end.
Then in a tweet. Now, I want to say one thing before we speak on that. Do you recognize the voice?
Let's unpack it!
Like game show music. No, that is our favorite 512.
That's our 512. Okay, yeah, but say some things.
There was a lot in there. Why don't we start at the beginning? They're disappointed in us.
Disappointed, and I think they're welcome to be disappointed. We're not going to always... listen, I disappoint myself sometimes.
Is this going to be the interview that tanks the pod?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I will say I very much disagreed with many of the things expressed in that voicemail.
One, that I'm being held hostage. If I didn't want to do the interview, I wouldn't have done the interview. So let's just say that, like... I'm not being held against my will to, like, talk to people.
I will say,
notice in the interview there are moments where I'm, like, clearly uncomfortable with something that he said and then try to make a joke about it.
Which is, the jokes were
which
funny.
Which is, yeah,
you
they
did
were
some
good.
Funny jokes.
You they were real. I was pretty on it.
Yeah.
But you will also find that he may not have the best sense of humor, so he doesn't really quite catch it.
And then number two, the other thing I'll say is there at the end talking about privilege. I very much agree with that, and I think that our cum dump who we interview, who we refer to as Jeff, I think Jeff even, Daddy Bezos. I think Jeff even talks about that because talks about a certain person who lost their insurance and therefore had to get off their meds, and yes. That was sort of a window into this idea of privilege. So I totally think that caller absolutely plays a role in a lot of this conversation. Though I do want to talk about the idea that you talked about, like, ethical slutness, because I do, you know that term. When you say that, you know, I'm so vanilla and I don't get into much and whatever, whatever. Of course, immediately I had a personal reaction to that where I was like, you don't know me. You don't know everything and I do.
Yeah, that was the part that really stung. That felt like he was really coming for. Oh, when he called us vanilla. You don't know what I do.
But also, sure, your perception of me could totally be vanilla. I don't understand, though, the ethical part of it, because I do feel like so much of our conversations around sex are being very open, being very positive, affirming when things are, you know, fucked up because they're non-consensual, you know, affirming people's experiences of, you know, leaving certain situations. And yeah, we joke about "and I stayed" all the time, but I think that's a common thing that happens with a lot of queer people when they find themselves in sexual positions, because there's been so much repressed sexuality for so long, they think, oh, you know, we all have this experience where we're like, well, where else am I going to get it? I'm going to stay, or I don't have, you know, the agency to leave. So I think that's like a more universal idea that we can all connect to.
That happens to everybody.
Anyways, if you were feeling like fuck Big Dipper and Meatball, you just got we just got a taste of our own medicine. Thank you, caller, for calling in. And Meatball, do you want to set up this interview a little bit?
So here we have it. This is an interview with a self-proclaimed, self-titled cum dump.
That's right.
I think he loves to get cum in his butt. And he explains why he prefers HIV positive cum.
That's right.
Other cums.
And this
it's
is
an
a person...
interesting conversation about this one person. This one Correct. Person's opinion is not everybody's opinion. It's definitely not mine.
And we have pitched down Jeff's voice.
Oh yeah, it might be a little harsh.
So give it about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever, and then you'll sort of get into the groove
and you'll
be able to understand it. We did pitch his voice down just because he has a Twitter in which he's like very public on the Twitter. We're not going to identify that Twitter. Like, he likes to sort of talk about it, and he was really into being on the podcast, but he also, I think a lot because of stigma, doesn't connect his like sexual life with his like real world life and professional life. So just, you know, here we go. Come for thought, food for thought. What's the phrase?
Cock for thought. So please enjoy, and save all of your criticisms. If you're going to listen to it and try to criticize us, at least wait to the end.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Get all the way through it. Hear it all, no matter how much you don't want to, because you gotta. I had to.
You gotta.
You gotta.
Medulla oblong.
You gotta. Enjoy. Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back.
Get 15% cash back at hundreds of stores, including headliners like Bombas, Elf Cosmetics, and Hotels.com.
Rakuten is how in-the-know shoppers get the best savings. They shop the brands they love and earn cash back on top of deals.
During Big Give Week, May 6th through May 13th, the cash back rates are even bigger with Rakuten. But only for a limited time.
You can save on everything you need for summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel.
And Rakuten deposits your cash back directly into your PayPal account, or they can send you a check.
Rakuten really is the best way to shop.
Membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost.
That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these.
Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app.
Rakuten.
Shoppers get it.
Rakuten. Hello, Jeff. Okay, so I guess my first question is that you identify yourself as a cum dump?
Yes, sir.
Don't sir me. I'm just kidding. Wait, so I guess what exactly does that mean to you? And like, do you feel comfortable saying that to people? Like, I refer to me as a cum dump.
I feel comfortable saying that to people I'm gonna have sex with. Mm. Clear to them that I'm there to take their load, and that's what I want. That will make me happy. For me, a cum dump is a guy who will literally let anyone who wants to fuck them, fuck them, and will be appreciative of that. And it doesn't always involve taking the load, but if the top feels that the bottom is worthy of the load, then that bottom will take the load.
Now, that's interesting because, like, to me, that's a window into your mentality. Mm-hmm. The idea of the bottom being worthy of the load, because oftentimes when you think about, especially in the sort of like like a cum dump scenario, it feels like it's like serving the top. So if the top wants to come, they get to come. But the inverse here of like the bottom being worthy of the load, I find really fascinating. I haven't really heard that before.
I've never heard that either. But I have a question. Do you ever feel like there's like a top not worthy of your hole?
No.
Okay.
I will let anyone who wants to fuck me fuck me. And in fact, there are the tops who may not be particularly desirable in a sex group setting. Those are the tops that I especially get off when they fuck me.
And why is that?
For me, it's the submissiveness that I am such a cum dump that I would literally let anyone who wants to fuck me, fuck me.
Wow. So when did you, so, okay. So wait, it's not about the cum. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, no, I have a follow up. Is that, how does that relate to your day-to-day life when you are not sort of like in cum dump mode? When you see any guy on the street, you could just go like, oh, I let him fuck me, let him fuck me, let him fuck me. Or do you find like in your day-to-day life being more discerning about like, oh, they're attractive, they're not attractive. Do you know what I'm saying?
In my day-to-day life, I definitely will pick and choose. I mean, if I'm going to go on a one-on-one hookup with someone, I am generally a little bit more discerning. I'm in a group setting, and the group setting is when I'm just a hole to be fucked and bred.
Okay. I thought this was like your zhuzh every day, all day, but I understand now that there's like a, you have to be in the mode. You got to be turned on. You got to be in a group.
It's in a group setting, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But also on my one-on-one hookups, I'm the bottom, I'm there to service my top. And if I don't come, that's okay with me. I don't need to come. For me, the sexual pleasure is in servicing my top and hopefully making him come.
So for you, being a cum dump isn't it really about, is it about the cum or is it more about servicing the top? Like, is it about collecting loads?
For me, it's collecting loads. I want that load.
And when did you realize that you like loved collecting loads?
It was sometime after I became HIV positive. Probably in the last 5 years, I used to be mostly top, and I transitioned to becoming a bottom and just loving cum.
And what is it specifically about cum? Like, what is it? Because some people would say, like, oh, yeah, cum is just that thing that shoots out of a guy's dick that, like, may or may not taste good, may or may not be thick and creamy. Like, there's, you know, like, depending on the kind of load you get, like, you don't know. Yeah. But for you, it's like cum
is
the thing.
You're never really
seeing them, are you? Like, what is it about cum? Oh, yeah, and if they're coming in your ass, you don't even see the load.
For me, it's a lot of it psychological, as is a lot of sex. It's cum is literally the essence of a man, and him giving you his load is the most incredible compliment he could give me as a bottom. I made him so happy. I gave him so much pleasure that he came inside of me. That to me is so incredible. And those few seconds that he's actually unloading me, where I can actually feel his cock pulsing, or I can hear him making the sounds that people typically make when they have an orgasm, for me, those few seconds are pure ecstasy.
And when were you able to tap into that? Because I want to get into the psychology, because you mentioned before, you know, becoming HIV positive. Were you always someone who was into taking loads, or was there a time before that when you were really into like condom sex and being safe in that way?
I am 48 years old right now. I started having sex around when I was 19, 20, 19.
Ooh. Late bloomer.
So that was the early 90s. So HIV was very prominent then in the gay porn you watched. It was 100% condoms. I grew up always using condoms for sex.
Okay.
I couldn't get hard putting on a condom, so I defaulted to the bottom roll early on. And I was a condom Nazi. I would not have sex without a condom, period. Mm. It was somewhere in the mid-2000s that I'm guessing I converted. I never played unsafe before then. I never intentionally played unsafe. I think a guy stealthed me in a sex club.
Explain what that means.
Yeah.
Stealthing is if the top puts on a condom and pretends they're using a condom, but at the actual moment of orgasm, either the condom's off or tears, or the cum basically ends up in the bottom. And there's one particular night at the sex club that I can remember, a guy wanted to fuck me without a condom. I said no. He insisted. I insisted. We ended up having sex. Halfway through the sex, I felt his condom on his dick, and so I thought we were all cool. But then after he came, my hole felt abnormally wet.
Oh, no.
And until that point, I had never taken a load before, so I didn't even know what my hole would have felt like with a load in it. But that's the only time in the mid-2000s that I can recall ever possibly taking a load. And I wasn't getting HIV tested during this time, so I was thinking, well, I'm 100% safe bottom. What do I have to worry about?
Mm.
And it was in 2009 that I finally tested and was positive.
Oh, so my goodness.
You believe that it was that night, that story?
That is my best guess, because I'm being 100% honest. I had never, before I found out I was paused, I had never barebacked. Except with my boyfriend at the time, who became my husband.
Uh-huh.
But the interesting thing is with him, I was all top. And he tested negative like a week before I tested positive.
Wow.
Wow.
And so when that shift happened for you, how did that change your view of like condom use and cum in general?
Yeah.
Well, for me, condoms were only there to protect against HIV. So now that at that point in time when HIV wasn't an issue, obviously when I first found out I was HIV positive, it was devastating. I was turned off by sex. I probably didn't have sex for several months. I was in a monogamous relationship with my husband at that point in time. But sex was not a turn on to me. But then we opened up our relationship at that point in time. And I started having sex with other guys. And at that point in time, I just wanted to talk. Because now that I didn't have to wear a condom anymore, I could get hard and remain hard during sex. And so I was just talking. And then, just looking at the pleasure the bottoms were getting from taking loads, I was all wet when I started taking loads. And so I just sort of slowly transitioned from pretty much all top to almost all bottom now. That was a transition of a course of probably over the course of a year or two.
Wow.
And we you and I spoke to sort of set
yes,
up this.
Yes, y'all had a private conversation.
We spoke to set up this interview, and you said something that I found really fascinating. So going back to, you mentioned that cum feels like the essence of a man, the life source. And I remember
asking. Are you keeping
the
cum? Are you, what do? You just hold on to it inside you, or do you like put it in a jar?
After guys coming?
Yeah.
I usually hold on to it for a few hours, and then at some point I have to poop, and so it comes out.
Wow.
You wave goodbye to the cum.
It's not like jelly beans where you can stick a whole bag up there and then it'll just disappear. these will fall out.
But what I was gonna say is that you mentioned like essence, you know, the start of life, right? Like, you know, sperm and an egg are what create something. You said before that or you said to me on the phone that a positive load is even hotter to you.
Oh.
Yes, because to me, and this is just my perspective, and I actually, speaking to other cum dumps, they have the same perspective for positive loads, that is the closest thing to male pregnancy that a gay man can achieve.
Male. And that's because...
Unpack that a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
Taking the load that's HIV positive, you actually have DNA from a virus injected into your butt. And your butt absorbs that virus. And so taking pause loads is getting impregnated by a top, basically.
And that to you, when you found yourself being turned on by that, when you found, like, you know, when you reflected back and you were like, wow, a decade ago, no one could come near me without a condom. Now I'm in a place where I want to take as many loads as possible and identify as a cum dump. And, what, you know, it's even hotter if they're pause loads. Like, how do you see that change in your brain? Like, did you have to come to terms with that? Do you feel the need to reconcile that?
Yeah.
Because there's a ton of stigma around that type of behavior as being like irresponsible. You know, I'm doing air quotes here.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's, let me back up a little bit. So yeah. I'm in the medical profession. There's still a tremendous amount of stigma associated with HIV in general. A lot of people still don't understand that if you're HIV positive but undetectable, that you're basically have a chronic controlled disease. It is irresponsible to crave HIV in the sense that, like, if I was neg and not on PrEP, however, the fact that I'm already paused, the fact that I'm on meds, makes a super infection incredibly unlikely. Mm. I'm basically the same risk of getting super infected with a strain of HIV as a neg on PrEP would be for getting infected with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the POS people I play with are undetectable, although honestly, when a non-medicated HIV top wants to breed me, that's like the epitome of sexual ecstasy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sought out some of those types of tops. So yes, it's totally irresponsible, but that's what I find sexually desirable.
Yeah.
Wow.
We've
had a conversation a little bit on here of bug chasers and the term like toxic load. What do you think about something like that? Or like, I don't know, here in our outline, we have like a...
Well, hold on one second, Meatball. You mentioned being in the medical profession. This was a conversation we had because what you just said was like a person who, an unmedicated PAS top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there there very much is a community, especially on Twitter, sex parties, people who are coming together, who are, you know, advertising that they are positive and maybe unmedicated or not at an undetectable place. Do people sort of wean themselves off of their meds in order to get their viral load to a certain place? Or are these people who probably just recently found out they're positive and have yet to get to an undetectable place? Because all that of edging the medicine seems like it could have a negative effect.
That's a lot of science.
So it's mostly people who have found out they're recently positive and just haven't either started medications yet, or they just started medicines and it takes several weeks for you to become undetectable. The one guy that I'm specifically thinking of who showed me his labs from a week prior with a viral load of 1.7 million who I actually sought out, he had lost his insurance, so he could not afford his medications
Oh, no.
For a period of a few weeks. And so his viral load shot up during those few weeks that he was off medications.
And that's when you were like, give me those babies.
Yes. So I think that it's pretty hard to, and I've heard of, and I know a lot of sex talk is all fantasy and not real, but I've heard of guys who will go off meds for a few weeks to get their viral load up, and they'll advertise that they're pause and medicated for those few weeks. They'll try to have sex, but I don't know if that's real. Just like all the bug chasers that you hear about, I know of a handful of what you call bug chasers who are HIV negative, who advertise themselves as not being on PrEP, but they've told me that yes, they're on PrEP.
Oh.
I don't know of a single
bug
chaser.
So you're calling them liars?
No, it's they're liars to a certain extent, but a lot of times the conversation doesn't become that explicit. It's mostly, I want your pause load. But they don't say that, oh, I'm neg on PrEP. They just say, I'm neg.
Okay.
So they sort of leave out some information.
And all of that is to build this fantasy
of
taking a
DNA.
Pause load. But they're sort of taking some precautions on their side for it to not have like a lifelong effect.
Right. And it's the fantasy of taking a pause load and getting impregnated by that pause load. Mm-hmm.
So is there like a way when you're at a sex club that isn't specifically an HIV, I don't know, bug chasing situation that you can identify someone? I know there's the toxic loads or the toxic symbol. And now I'm just now seeing that there's like scorpion tattoos or snake tattoos. Is that real or is that just like the hanky code? It's gone out of favor.
So if I see a guy with a biohazard tattoo, which is the typical tattoo you see if someone's paused, or a scorpion tattoo, those are probably the two most common ones. If I see those guys, I can assume they're paused. Whether they're toxic or not, I don't know. But no, otherwise at a sex club, I can't tell whether someone's paused or neg, just like you can't tell someone's paused or neg in real life. Although some of the older men who have lived with HIV for 20, 30 years will have the AIDS wasting or HIV wasting that a lot of bug chasers find very attractive, myself.
Okay.
And what is that?
That's sort of
in the cheeks a little bit.
Sort of sunken cheeks, very wasted muscles, big belly, like low body fat percent. It's just a look,
right?
And it's horrible that I think this way, but that look is a turn on to me.
Mm.
Have you encountered people like say with that look, right, that you go up to and they want nothing to do with the idea of their load being paused. They want nothing to do with the idea of like, put your pause load in me. And for them, it's actually a very sort of like emotional and traumatic and sort of off limits type of conversation. And they are, you know, sort of, they don't want HIV to enter into the sexual conversation. How do you gauge whether or not you can sort of work your fantasy or your dirty talk into that interaction with them?
So yes, absolutely, 100%. Yes, I have definitely met guys who I know for a fact, either because they said a line in their profile that they were HIV positive, or they have that look. And I will broach the HIV topic with them. And I don't usually in the sex situation, I'll broach the HIV topic with my partners as they're fucking me. And if they reciprocate, great. And if they don't reciprocate, I just stop it. Because I know that a lot of guys are turned off by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have one question, and it's about the term, and I know we've touched on it, but it's about the term toxic.
Yeah.
Like, if let's take your cum dump jock strap off and put on your medical professional undies.
Scrubs.
What? Your scrubbies.
You're putting your scrubs.
Your figs. Now, I feel like the term toxic is like not a good term. It's like not a good thing to call people.
Right.
Yeah, toxic has negative connotations, but in the cum dump world, cum dumps, there's some that are turned off by, but a lot of bug chasers or guys into HIV sex, toxic is a huge turnoff.
Well, yeah, I understand. It's just like how faggot's a bad word, but like gays use it all the time. I use it all the time. But we could think, what about right now if we maybe tried to turn the phrase? We came up with a new word.
New word for like, toxic?
What if we called it like his, his rampant load. Like, rampant. We could come up with a new fun word.
Yeah, something like that. It's extra credit. I mean, but this is what's interesting is because I think that I think part of the whole psychology behind it is that there is a stigma. It is dangerous. It is something that has so much trauma and suffering linked to it that it has sort of gone full circle for some people and become a fetish, and especially with you having the experience of sort of becoming pause and not even really sort of knowing how it happened or finding out in the moment and having to like think back on it, I'm sure that shook your world for a little bit. And so it feels like reclaiming something. People want the original word, you know, to use the terms that other people use in a negative way, if that makes sense. Does that feel like it rings true to you?
I definitely think that's true. But also, toxic is unambiguous. If someone says they're toxic, in our world at least, it means they're detectable viral load.
Mm-hmm. And when Brittany says it, she just means that she's like real fun to be around.
She's real fun to be around. So, okay. So, we've been mentioning this idea, this what I think is maybe a growing trend on the podcast, and we've gotten a lot of like, it's been a little polarizing. We've gotten some feedback from people saying, don't talk about that. This is, you know, there's so much trauma around this. Bug chasing is really taboo, et cetera, et cetera. We understand that there is a broad world full of different people who view things differently. But I think it is important to talk about it because this isn't something that happened in the 90s out of depression. You know, I know that there was a huge population of folks who looked around and they had been participating in the same sexual behaviors as their entire friend group. They somehow were not HIV positive. Everyone around them was dying and they were sitting there living so depressed that they wanted to go out and seek HIV. I understand that that's sort of how the term began, but now people are sort of interacting with HIV in this different way. And I think it's worth talking about. People are making specific porn related to, I guess another term is charging people up.
What?
Yeah, charged loads.
Charged loads.
Oh, so there is another fun word for it.
There you go. Toxic loads, charged
Mama,
loads.
Mama, she's charged up.
So there's a porn studio called Charged Up Media.
Oh, no.
And I saw this on Twitter. It says, are you toxic with tats? And it has a scorpion, a cobra snake, and a biohazard tattoo as example. And this says gang breeding that's happening during pig week in Fort Lauderdale. Are you HIV positive and high viral? Do you have a biohazard tattoo, scorpion tattoo, or snake tattoo? Charge Up Media will be producing a film with a cast built entirely of men who proudly advertise their status. This will be a gangbang using Tim as the sole bottom. Please, no temporary tattoos.
And they'll be checking.
If you want to be included in this film, sign up at their website. So what are your thoughts on this?
I totally relate to that.
You're normally in Tim's position.
I would love to meet him. And I understand his where he's coming from, why he talked to him. Tim was actually one of the, I'm guessing he was probably 20 years old way back in 2000 when Hot Desert Nights started doing bareback videos. Uh-huh. And he was one of their bottoms. And Hot Desert Nights was basically a porn studio. Probably one of the first who started doing bareback porn. And they were basically just using regular guys who were having sex with each other bareback anyways in the Palm Springs area. And they decided to film some of their sex parties. Mm-hmm. And the focus, there was no discussion of HIV during the scene. Like, people weren't saying, oh, give me your toxic load, give me your charge load. But it was, there was a focus on bareback indie-ass cum shots.
Because that hadn't been seen in so long.
No.
Even bareback porn from movie, I call it condomless porn. I don't really call it bareback porn. So bareback porn is different focus. But condomless porn from the 1970s and 80s, the focus was not on the cum. The focus was not on getting loads and asses. You'll notice that most of the time, you guys pull out and cum, and that's it. Nowadays, guys will pull out and cum, usually on the asshole, and then they'll push the cum back in. And that's where I distinguish bareback sex, which is current, versus condomless sex, which is
the pre-condom porn. That makes sense.
So when you partake in these big group scenes like Tim does, do you, you've never been in a movie, right?
Do that if you wore like a hood or something, cover your face up.
I did one amateur movie, like a formal movie called Manhattan Sex Party, done by Cruising for Sex back in 1999-ish or so.
Wow. So when they are filming those, like what's the longest you've spent getting fucked all night? Like 6 hours, 8 hours, you show up in the morning and you clock out at 5?
Oh, if I go to a sex party or sex club, I'll usually be there for 4 hours, give or take.
Wow.
I'm not getting fucked constantly during that time. It's, guys will fuck me for 15, 20, 30 minutes, or series of guys will fuck me for 15, 20, 30 minutes, and then we'll get fucked for 15 or 20 minutes because I'm just either resting or looking for someone, or
Are you the type of person to sort of find a spot and, be on all fours and just wait? And sort of whoever comes up, or you like to sort of like try to get some action going?
I will periodically be asked up just waiting for guys, but I don't like to do that because I don't like to occupy a space that other guys may be actually using to fuck.
A kind of considerate comes.
So I try to be a considerate bottom. I'll sit there for 5, maybe 10 minutes, ass up, and if no one's biting, then I'll stand up and walk around and come back in 5 or 10 minutes and see if any more action is built up.
What do you think about while you're just waiting there? Ass in the breeze, hole to the wind.
I just think about, I hope someone comes up and starts fucking me, and I hope I never see their face.
Oh.
Say you're waiting, and then you take 2 or 3 dicks, and you never turn around, you never see their face, and then you get up to sort of take a break or walk around. Do you look around and try to imagine who may have fucked you?
No.
Oh, it's not about that.
Because you don't care. See, in my mind, I'm like, I would try to figure it out.
No, baby. This is eyes wide shut. It's about the vibes.
There's a guy whose cock felt particularly good. They have a particularly good rhythm. For whatever reason, I really enjoyed the fuck. I'll try to like look up, or as soon as they pull out of me, I'll look up and see who it is so that I can try to maybe establish some contact with them again later on that same night, or get their information and fuck on the outside. But
outside of the sex club.
This prison of a sex club.
Dipper sent me a spreadsheet
that you keep, and it details all the loads that you've taken, and you set an annual cum goal for yourself. What is your annual cum goal? And you must just be obsessed with taking loads. That's the end of that. What's the cum goal?
So, yeah, I set up a Google spreadsheet where on a daily basis, I will enter, I got two anal lobes, two oral lobes, whatever. And then it automatically updates a monthly tally. And by my monthly tally, I can get a yearly tally. And I think a couple years ago, I don't remember the exact number, I want to say I took like 250 loads during the year, both oral and anal.
That doesn't mean 200 people, because some of these, I'm looking at the thing, some of these people are giving you multiple loads.
Yes, that, or I'll hook up with the same guy over the course of a month several times. So it's not necessarily 250 people. However, I probably have sex with 3 to 4 times that number, since most guys who fuck me don't actually give me their loads.
Now, can I ask? I'm looking at the spreadsheet now, and across the top of it, it says ATAGOTOGJO.
Anal taken, anal given?
Right. Oral taken, oral given, and then...
You see, the given numbers are so, mostly zeros.
Yeah, you're not given a lot here. But what happened in September, October, November, and December?
The pandemic, probably?
No, that's maybe this upcoming this year. This is this year.
Yeah, that's this year. You have this year's spreadsheet. So September, October, November, December.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the first quarter and thinking that we should be...
We're looking at Q4 now. what do you title in your Google Doc? What is this title?
No, did your husband ever see it?
My husband has never seen it. He probably knows that I have a low goal every year because he follows my Twitter. So the pre-pandemic, I set a goal of 366 loads last year, one load for each day. You know, obviously I don't get a load every day, but I'll go like a week or two without getting any loads, and then I'll have a sex party where I'll get 10, 15, 20 loads. But I set a goal of 366 last year, and then the pandemic occurred, and I ended up with like, I don't know, 80 loads for the entire year, and that was all pretty much the first few months. This year, I initially had a goal of 200, but then after a really good July and August, I bumped it up to 250. So right now, my goal for this year is 250, and I'm probably at 100, and I haven't looked at my spreadsheet, but I'm probably about 115 or 20 loads for the year so far.
And you have big plans for tonight?
Yeah, there's a comedian tonight, so hopefully I'll get 10, 15, maybe if I'm really lucky to phone loads tonight.
Well, I wish you all the best.
Likewise.
I hope you get those loads.
We're wrapping up right here, but if you were to like, I just want to like, if you were to like give sort of like sum up your feelings about, taking loads and HIV and the idea of maybe like a young impressionable person listening to your story, because what I love about your sexual experiences in your life is that you have tapped into something that you know makes you happy, that you know gives you sexual ecstasy, and you can even identify the psychology behind it. But you also do it in a way that you feel is responsible for your own life, you know, for your own actions. Like, you're not being careless with your own self, right? Like, you're very much in control. If you were to talk to someone like a younger impressionable person, like, do you feel like you're like glad you became HIV positive? Like, that's a very stigma thing to say, but I'm just curious. Or do you think you only feel this way because you happen to become HIV positive? And do you know, like, cum dumps who are on PrEP and hope to stay negative?
That's a very multi-part
question. I think those things
that
are important.
Chanel.
So,
yeah, it was like too many questions, but those are important things to think about.
So online, guys, inevitably will learn of my HIV fetish, and at least often hear from cum dumps to men bottoms who want to become positive, and I always tell them that if I had the choice, I would be negative. That choice was not given to me as a result of me just having sex, which I thought was 100% protected, I became HIV positive somehow. And I would, I always thought, do everything you can to stay negative, because there's still stigma out there. You will have health problems. I have to have a doctor's visit every 6 months, and you know, I have to spend X number of dollars. You know, it's a minimal copayment. I still have to spend some money on my HIV medicines, and it's still something that I, it's a burden that I have to bear. That said, not having been given the choice of becoming HIV positive, I do think that it's allowed me a level of freedom that I probably would not have, even if I was on, if I was neg on PrEP. It's just this liberating, I guess, feeling that I have with regards to being a bottom for sex. So most of, actually every quote unquote bug chaser that I know who says that they're chasing HIV is actually on PrEP. And I always tell them, please stay on PrEP. You know, engage in the fantasy all you want, but stay on PrEP. And hopefully they do. I don't know.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for being here today.
Jeff, the cum dump!
And answering all of our questions and being so open and honest.
Thank you, guys.
How do you feel now?
Me? I felt great. Yeah. I felt great when I did the interview with you. I felt great. I felt great when I saw when I saw Jeff recently.
Did you fuck Jeff?
I saw him out in the world. I didn't fuck him, but I saw him.
Where? Well,
I
never
saw him out.
A spank party. You blew him. What a wonderful interview. A different point of view than I've heard. That's, I'd also like to say, like, it's
that's the big takeaway.
He seems to be practicing responsibly, whether or not what he's doing is responsible or irresponsible.
The thing for me that was the biggest takeaway when we got off the call with Jeff was, after all of that fantasy talk, after all of everything, at the end of that interview when we asked him, what would you say to young people? And Jeff said, remain negative. Do not become HIV positive.
Yeah.
We need to reduce completely and get rid of the stigma around HIV positive people. But also, if you were to choose a life without a chronic disease or a life with a chronic disease, you would choose...
You choose without.
Without. And I, that really stuck with me because... the fantasy life can be alive and well. Listen, there are plenty of people who have rape fantasies. That, I mean, that's a really taboo thing, but there are plenty of people who have that fantasy.
And there are companies, there are sex workers that you can pay that will kidnap and rape you.
Correct. And as long as those fantasies are executed in a safe, consensual way and executed in a way... or acted out in a way that both parties are really into and really get off on, that to
adult
me
adult consenting party
is a great way to explore your sexuality.
See if you like it or not. Would I do it? Again, most likely not. But if that's what someone else is into, I'm not going to yuck someone's yums. I'm not going to say if it's right or wrong. It's his life. He can do what he wants. And he seems to be doing it with consenting adults.
Right.
What was the most shocking part of the interview for you? Mine was the spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet is amazing. The spreadsheet is so so fun, and to me, really sort of, you know, like brings home the idea that Jeff is like fully obsessed with this, fully the like identifies as a cum dump, and fully like this is a part of their life. Not a phase, not a moment, not a, ooh, I'm really feeling it tonight on Saturday night and I want to take a few loads tonight. Like this, like Jeff has tapped into a part of his identity that makes him feel his most sexual. And to me, that, you know, that is a good thing. To find that spot in your life.
He knows what he wants and he's out there getting it.
Yeah. Okay. So something, Meatball, you and I talked about is, remember, we like initially we were like, oh, we want to get this kind of an interview and this kind of interview, this kind of interview, and put them all together. But at this point, we just sort of have this interview. So something that I'm hopeful we can do on Sloppy Seconds is, as we move forward, have the opportunity to do these types of interviews with people and not feel like, oh, we have to build some big special around it. Yeah. But, you know, like, I just would love to interview a dominatrix. I would love to interview. We consider ourselves an incredibly sex positive show. We tell these fuck talk stories. We get voicemails from people. And I want to hear from all experiences. So, you know, I look forward to further interviews that we may have on the show.
Absolutely. And I think that this will be great for us to just drop these in whenever we feel like it. So it doesn't have to be like a big
to do.
Yeah. Because I mean, again, whether or not I agree with this person, I did enjoy interviewing them. I did enjoy seeing the other side. I did learn a lot from them. So we can all learn from this. This is a big learning.
We can learn
experience.
Something, right?
Yes.
From the other side. You
Hello
said from the other
from
side.
From the other side.
Are you ready for the return of Adele?
I am. Hopefully I'm at our next birthday party. You know what I mean? Our number is 213-536-9180. Go ahead and email us at sloppysecondspod@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss an episode, which I come out every Tuesday and Friday. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at SloppyPod, at Spicy as Meatball, or Big Dipper Jelly, or Fat Jack Meatball on Twitter. Okay, goodbye.
Doodle-a-doo-doo, forever dog.
To listen to Sloppy Seconds ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus.
Sloppy Seconds is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, a.k.a. Mom.
Hosted by Big Dipper and Meatball. Music, editing, and sound design by William Pitt.
Executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Joe Cilio, Brett Boehm, and Alex Ramsey.
Our artwork was drawn by Christian Cimarroni.
And our theme song was written by Mike Malarkey.